If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm Jeff Gordon with Post Dispatch, joined by Matthew DeFranks, our beat reporter, as we get ready for another season on the ice. Matthew, it starts off with the kids getting some work done and getting together out at Centene and then heading up to play a couple games of prospects. A big year for a lot of these guys. Probably won't see many, if any, of them this season. But a big developmental year for the Blues as they try to fill in behind their nucleus in the years to come.
Yeah, I think throughout this whole retool plan by the Blues, we've seen certain waves reach the NHL, right? We've seen the older wave with Shen and Parayko, Bennington, Falk, that kind of group. The one behind that with Thomas and Kyrou. The one even behind that with Broberg, Holloway, and that type of young 20s group. And now these guys are really the youngest part of that wave system that the Blues are trying to build right now. And in this prospect tournament, the Blues have five of their own first round draft picks in this tournament, which is pretty good, I think. When you typically think this tournament has, you know, 2 or 3 years worth of prospects, and the Blues put, you know, five first rounders of their own into this roster. Plus Zach Dean, who we know was a first-round pick of Vegas. So it's a really talented roster. And as you mentioned, a lot of these guys aren't going to be expected to contribute to the Blues in the NHL this season. I think we know Dalibor Dvorsky has a chance to, but this is first year over in North America for Theo Lindstein, first full year for Otto Stenberg. Justin Carboneau is still just a teenager who probably will be going back to junior hockey after this. And then you have Adam Juracek, who missed last year's tournament with an injury. So you have all those guys who, four of them haven't played in this tournament before, and one of them could potentially use it as a springboard to the NHL. But we know it's an outside shot that he may see the opening night roster, and I'm sure we'll see him at some point throughout the season.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Dvorsky. I like to use the Pavel Dimitra comp. But I have to remind our Blues fans that it took Dimitra 4 years of going back and forth from the AHL and also the IHL before he stuck. He stuck at the age of 23. He matured into a huge impact player, but it took time to make the evolution. He was a center, moved to the wing, a lot of the same attributes. This is a player that has to pick up pace, has to obviously just physically mature. And, evolve as an all-around player at the compete level you need to be at in the NHL. And again, particularly with the pace for him.
Yeah, I think with Dvorsky, it's one of these things where we all forget how young he actually is because of what he's already done. This is a guy who's been, you talk about physical maturity, but the mental maturity and professional maturity, like that is already there with him. Like that's been there for him because he's lived on his own in Sweden starting at 15, 16 years old. When he moved away from Slovakia, played in Sweden, obviously he came and played in Sudbury as a teenager, and then played in the AHL last year as a teenager. So, he's still going to be 20 years old. And if he had played major junior hockey throughout his entire career, if he was Canadian, like he would just be turning pro right now. This is something that I think we all forget because he's been, in the AHL last year as one of the youngest players in the league, because he put up those numbers in Sudbury, because he was a first round pick. It's just one of those things where he is still young. Like, as you mentioned, a lot of guys don't truly stick until, 22, 23. And he could be the same case. So this is also a situation where the Blues don't want to rush him. Like they've mentioned that time and time and time again, that the team fails the player as much as the player fails the team. That's one of Doug Armstrong's go-tos in talking about player development. And that goes to say they don't want to rush a guy like Dvorsky when they don't need to. They have enough guys in the NHL that they don't need to rush this guy up there. But if he does come out and perform well, you know, I think there are spots to be taken. So they kind of fit a nice little window for him to make the team if he plays well. But if he doesn't, they don't need to rush him. And, you know, as you mentioned, yeah, his pace has always been one of the issues with his game. But it was one of the improvements last year in Springfield. When you talk to the people down there and what he did throughout the season, they liked how that improved, how he played a little faster, how he adjusted to the game speed of the second best league in the world, really. And so it was a lot of growth for him last year, and he still has the offensive upside that he's shown at every level.
Yeah, one thing you could point to with the guys like him are guys that can hold the puck, can slow the play down, can control things. They can also, pace can be an issue because they can slow the game down. They can freeze opponents. They can, games can, while they protect the puck, you know, they can, you know, dictate, but you still have to, you know, pop in this league. It's such a fast league. So guys that have that level of ability, then they've just been able to dominate by controlling the puck. Now it's a whole different deal having to play, especially at the NHL pace.
Yeah, and that's one of his biggest strengths. I mean, I think you look at the good things about him and you see his shot is number one. The way he can paint corners and kind of get it off quickly. That's and score a lot of goals, score accurately, score hard. That's the biggest thing, but then also the puck protection part of it and being able to hold off opponents, put someone on his hip, display sort of he's not a true power forward, but display some power forward tendencies in terms of the way you're able to physically handle the puck and navigate it around defenders. So that's been part of his game since, you know, honestly, the first time that we saw him at development camp 2 years ago, that was one of the biggest things that he did was protect the puck and put guys on his hip and do all those things. And, you know, I think there are players that can overcome being slow, right? Like it's a good skill to have to stay fast in today's NHL, but it's not something that is a death knell, right? Like there are guys who overcome that. I think about, you know, when I was in Dallas, Jason Robertson, like he is not a good skater. That's just not part of his repertoire, but he overcomes that with being a really smart player, understanding where he needs to be and having a really great shot. Those are things that you can overcome with other skills, particularly if you have a high hockey IQ and you can navigate your way around the ice and know where to be. That's good that you can overcome that. I mean, I think on that same line they had down there in Dallas with Joe Pavelski, and he was never really that good at skating, but he knew where to be, and he had a certain skill set of tipping and rebounding and getting to dirty areas, and that's how he made his living. You know, if I think about up in Edmonton, I'm not saying that Dalibor Dvorsky is Leon Draisaitl, but he skates slowly, and he makes up for it with an elite shot and really high hockey IQ as well. So there are players that can overcome it. It's just, are your other skills good enough to get you to that level? And that's something we'll have to see with Dvorsky when he ultimately sticks in the NHL.
Yeah, a lot of hockey is played in the half-court offense. If you can control the puck, sustain pressure, and these are things that Dvorsky can do with his ability to control the puck. So much damage is done on that tempo of play, and that certainly will play to his strength. The breakaways, you know, that's Kyrou's world. Jordan Kyrou is going to get some rush goals. Holloway to a degree, too. So you got guys who can do that, and you're also having guys who can mix in with this sort of skill. But let's talk about you don't want to lower a player's ceiling by rushing him. And I thought going back in time when you go back to the Drew Bannister taking the team, they're looking at guys, trying to assess what they have. They brought Zach Dean up, and he had a couple of good weeks or maybe a good month in the A, but he hadn't certainly dominated at that level offensively. He hadn't been a big impact guy, had adapted to the pace and had made progress, but then he's brought to the NHL before he really, you know, became that one of those guys in the A. And of course, then the injury wipes him out last year. I think there's a danger in guys if you lower their ceiling if you do rush them. And I was a little worried at the time that Dean is a guy that, boy, he needed a lot more work before he got his first NHL look. And you don't want guys to settle for a lower level when they, if they stay down there and develop all aspects of their game and become more of a takeover guy, a dominant guy, a key situation guy, shoulder that responsibility, become that person at that level, it's a lot easier to make it the jump to the NHL at a higher level.
Just a small note, how long ago does the spring of, I guess, 24 feel like, right? Like that was when... was when Bannister was, they're riding out the string and putting in the new guy. Like, how long ago does that feel?
Like, it's a much different team with a lot of the same guys, right? So, much different team.
Yeah. So, like, on Dean, I do think like his ceiling was already limited when the Blues acquired him. I remember when they made that trade with Vegas, sending Barbashev over there and getting Dean back. One of the quotes from Doug Armstrong he was talking about the trade was, Dean's probably number seven forward, probably at the top end, right? And like when you're saying a guy is at best your best third line forward, that already puts a little bit of a ceiling on him, especially when he was an unfinished product when he arrived in St. Louis in that trade. So I think it's realistic, right? I don't think they should be saying that he's a top six forward. So I do think realistic outlook by Doug Armstrong. But I don't know how much the cup of coffee at the end of that season impacted his development. I think the injuries have been tough. Even that he went through some of them. And obviously last year, I believe it was in the injury that knocked him out for a long portion of the year and really... it was really kind of a lost year of development for him. So our, paths back and for him to play some competitive hockey again, to get his feet wet again, to maybe gain some confidence against some guys he's older than. And I don't know his plan for letters during this tournament is, but I wouldn't be surprised if he is named a captain or at the very least is wearing an A. I think in the past the Blues have used the captaincy of the prospect team as sort of the most senior member on that team or the guy who is trying to fight for an NHL spot. 2 years ago it was Nikita Alexandrov who was the captain, and he went to that tournament with the most NHL games of anyone in it. Last year was Zach Bolduc, and that kind of set him up to make the NHL roster and have the season that he did. So, I wouldn't be surprised if it was Zach Dean coming up this year, just partially based on his age and partially based on his previous NHL experience and his future NHL goals, potentially even this year.
Blues have to get younger on D. They've taken steps in that direction. They've made a couple of big moves with Boberg. You trade my boy Zach Bolduc to get a big right-hand shot on D that might even become a top four guy if he can handle power play work. This is a but you still have to get younger and younger and younger. So looking at the D-men who are continuing to develop, the two in particular here, Juracek's got to stay healthy this season. And Lindstein's played a lot of hockey over in Sweden. Now he's got to play a lot of hockey in the A, and probably a higher ceiling on Juracek, could be a top four guy at some point. Maybe Lindstein's more of a really good third pairing guy who's reliable. Your take on these two guys, and they're not front burner guys, but by next season, might be a little different story.
Yeah, I think Juracek, I'm interested to see, just because we haven't seen a ton of him in the last few years because of injuries. We know he missed almost... I guess he missed the second half of his draft year when he had his knee injury at the World Juniors, and the Blues drafted him even despite that injury. And then there was still a long recovery into the following season, and he missed a chunk of time with injuries that year too. So like he's had a lot of injuries, and he's had a lot of time off the ice, not playing. And so he's sort of the epitome of an unfinished product, even as far as prospects go. And then you add in that he's a defenseman, that those typically take a little bit longer to develop than forwards. And there's a lot of question marks around just how good he is or can be. And so I am interested to see what he's able to provide. I think, you know, if I think about their roster on defense, you know, and in a certain way, the way that you're drafted sort of sets up the way that you're used in some of these tournaments, right? He was a first round pick. What was he? Top 15, 16. So you're going to want to see him run a power play and get big minutes and do those sorts of things. If I look at their defensemen, I think, you know, Bushinger probably has a good shot to run a power play. Jiříček might be running the other one, or it could be Lindstein there too. So they'll probably get him some offensive minutes, get him big minutes to see what he can do against a slightly higher competition than junior, I would say. And as far as Lindstein goes, we talked about ceiling of prospects, and I think he's one of those guys that for a few years, it's just kind of, this is who he is. This is the steady Theo Lindstein. He's going to break pucks out pretty well. He's going to skate well in transition. He's going to make smart plays. He's not going to be super, super dynamic, but he will be really reliable and really mobile on the back end. And, you know, teams need those types of guys. It's just a matter of, you know, how does that translate to the smaller ice as well? Because he is very patient. He's very deliberate. He makes smart plays with the puck, but it is with a little bit more time on the bigger ice in Sweden. And so you wonder, with a heavier forecheck, a more physical game, smaller ice, how does that game translate to North America? And how much time does he need to kind of adjust to it? Is it a half year? Is it a full year? Is it a year and a half? Like, what is that timeline to get him adjusted, and particularly with the way that he plays, the poised, calm, smooth style that he has, that he's been used to playing with bigger ice and more time? How does that really translate here?
It's fun to look at defenseman development because you just don't know. Look at Lane Hutson, monster year in Montreal. A look at Scott Perunovic, now once again starting over this time with the Mammoth, back with a GM who knows him. Two guys, smaller D-men, offensive-minded, great playmakers, can see the ice, can make plays. One becomes a massive impact player. The other has a hard time staying in the NHL. Pretty similar draft positions too, right?
Yeah, I don't know for sure when Hutson was drafted, so I can't say for certain, but I mean, that feels right. I don't know though.
It shows you though, it's just tough. I mean, these guys were similar capabilities, you know, in terms of what they've done at lower levels with just dominant play with the puck. And then you get to this level and you have to make those decisions quickly. As you talk about with Lindsay, you have to face a heavier forecheck and you have to do enough to make your offensive skill shine. When you get a chance on the power play, you have to survive the rest of the shifts to get that chance, you know, which he did and which Scott has not done.
Yeah, so Hutson went 62nd overall in 22 and Perunovic was 45th overall in 2018. Is worth noting that Perunovic was an overager when he got drafted. He wasn't drafted as an 18-year-old, so a little different circumstances in that scenario. But yeah, you're right, like undersized, small, shifty offensive D-man. And like, I think about, it's really hard for like those types of players to succeed. And like, that's the Julius Honka stuff in Dallas, or Nils Lundqvist with New York and now in Dallas, Kalen Addison, who bounced around with Minnesota and San Jose and Pittsburgh. Like, those are all guys from that small defenseman mold, where maybe, you know, Torrey Krug is the patron saint. of that of this generation of being a smaller guy that can produce big numbers offensively and make an NHL career out of it. But I look at this Blues prospect group right now, and you know, Bouchinder is probably the only one that I would say is on the smaller side, and he's a little bit thicker. He's not as wiry as Hudson or Perunovic are or were, and all the other guys, they have some size on them and at least some height and room to fill out.
Yeah, all right, let's strip back to the front lines here and talk about Otto Stenberg. Character guy at the junior level, played well against his peers, you know, on the big stage, has some offensive ability, got a half season in at the A, started becoming productive in the American Hockey League after having trouble getting good minutes, productive minutes at the highest level in Sweden. So he made the shift to the American League, which was good because he got some work in. Now his first full year in the A, I guess the expectations are, let's see if he can become an impact guy at that level, continue his adaptation. And then this is a guy, middle six guy, probably a third liner, but a real, just a kind of a reputation of just a real good hockey player. Nothing too flashy there. Not a franchise changer, but you know, he checked a lot of boxes coming up through the his ranks.
Yeah, he's like, as you mentioned, he's a hockey player. Like, and sometimes that's the biggest compliment that someone can get, is he's a hockey player. He's competitive. He's willing to get into to battles. He's willing to go to the front of the net. He's a little bit feisty. He's got a huge physical edge to him, but he's got some rat-like qualities in him from some of his time in Sweden that I've seen. And you know, the coaches down in Springfield loved the way that he improved after he arrived. I mean, as you mentioned, started the season in the SHL with Malmo and then came over to Springfield and played the last 38 games of the season there to get more playing time, to kind of get the ice time that the Blues wanted him to have. And yeah, I mean, he's someone who's captained the Swedish World Junior team. That's the other U18, excuse me. And like, he's a character guy, as you mentioned. And yeah, I think he was drafted as a center, but he hasn't really played center since he was drafted. He's been almost exclusively a wing in his time in Sweden and even in Springfield last year. He played almost exclusively wing. And so I think that's how the Blues project him to be on the wing, but definitely a competitive guy. Brings a lot of different skills in different areas where he might not be transcendent in any one of them, but he does do a lot of things throughout the game correctly that you need. And, you know, one small thing that I noticed from the roster announcement with the numbers. So Otto Stenberg, they gave number 28. And in the past, I think he's been, you know, number 70 or 60 something, or like, once you start getting real numbers, it's kind of an indication of this is a player that could potentially impact the NHL roster. Once you get a real number like that, I think sometimes the guys beat the expectations to make it to the NHL, and they just end up sticking with that number. You look at Jake Neighbors right now, wearing 63 when he wore 21 in junior, or you know, Tyler Tucker, who's still rocking a solid 7.5. But for the most part, the numbers that they're assigned can kind of dictate some of the expectations for the player from the organization. And right now, Otto Stenberg has number 28. So I wonder how much the Blues think he can contribute in the NHL.
I'm trying to find a comp here for him. What about a guy like Stankoven, who's a real sturdy player? Obviously, fits Carolina as well, coming over from on the Rantanen trade from Dallas. Probably a premier third line type guy who can also play up a little bit. Was that a fair expectation of someday for Stenberg? Not any time like next week or something, but eventually?
I think they're different players. You know, Stankoven has he has one of the highest motors that I've seen, just in terms of the way he dogs pucks, the way he's in battles all the time. He's kind of never stops out there. And so I think between that and his really high scoring offensive productivity that he had in the Western League, I think it's just a different player than Stenberg. But yeah, I can see where you're coming from there. Yeah.
And we'll see what sort of offensive upside that Otto has. All right, there's some big forwards in this prospect mix, and these guys typically take a long time to develop. You've got even guys who are on the cusp of the NHL. They talk about needing 400 games versus 200 games to really get a feel for them once they get to the league. So it'll be interesting to see how the Blues can translate some of the size that they've drafted beyond the first round. And even with on the blue line, too, with a guy like Ralph, who's a big, certainly a big dude going to trying to step up his game with a college shift. Size, you know, you cannot teach. Hockey, you can. And I guess the teaching hockey will continue with this week.
Yeah, like, you know, Jakob Stancil is turning pro this year after a career spent in Czech, Sweden, and last year he was with Kelowna in the Western League. He's a bigger guy that brings some size up front. I mean, Pekarčík he's got a little bit of height, but he's not all that thick. He does like to dangle and try to get inside on guys, so he's got a little size factor there. Carbonneau, he's thick. He's got some size to him already as an 18-year-old, or I don't know if he's already turned 19 or not, but he is a big body. And I think that's part of the reason why maybe the Blues were not that concerned about him going back to junior instead of going the college route. I think we see some guys go the college route when they want to get a little bit bigger, when they want to add some size, they have more time in the weight room. They have, only 2 games a week. They have a lot of more time to develop individually and physically, really. But Carbonneau's already there in terms of his size. I mean, they talked about him having a man's body, and he was just drafted this summer. So the fact that he's already there is probably promising for the Blues. And Jekko is also a kind of a taller guy. So they do have some size up front. It's not like they're the biggest group I've ever seen. They still do have smaller guys, Kostromaki, Robertson, Stenberg himself might be a little bit smaller. Dean is on the slightly shorter side. I would say he's probably more closer to average, but they do have some bigger bodies. And, Carbonneau, I'm intrigued to see this week and see how he can play now after we saw him at development camp kind of bully some guys.
Yeah, it'll be most interesting to see him when he gets into one of those. I assume we'll see him in a exhibition game where he has to really line up against guys who are somewhat older, maybe guys who are more AHL caliber guys, but still, because he did have his way. And the question, I guess, for him, what he needs to prove to the scouts is, you know, he's able to just manhandle some people and be dominant with his shot and his size and so forth. The scouts point to hockey sense. Can he read plays at both ends of the ice? Can he will he be anticipate well enough to when he's playing in against players his size and with his ability, can he flourish? And can he take that step? Can he get that feel for the game that they're still looking for? Because frankly, I suppose it's fair to say he hasn't really had to demonstrate as much of that, and in the playing where he has.
Yeah, and it's not that his competitive level is questioned. Because I think he competes at a high level and he's really, really wants the puck at all times. But it's just a matter of getting that consistency on the defensive end too. I think even in small sample size of 3-on-3 at development camp, you could see some lapses. And this is a guy who was tied for second in goals last year in the Quebec League, up there in points, and he went to the 18th or 19th spot, whatever the Blues drafted. So, he has a lot of offensive upside. It's about kind of just rounding out the rest of his game and getting to a point where they like where he's at on both sides of the ice. I think the offensive upside is definitely noticeable in there, but it's just about kind of getting that defensive part of the game there too.
Well, he certainly has a little swagger too, and I think there's a guy that's there's going to be some leadership there when he does make it, and it'll be fascinating to see if he does well this year in the queue, which you would expect. Is there the expectation that at tail end of the year, depending on what happens with his team and depending on what's happening in the A, that he could get some exposure there?
Yeah. I mean, I think his team is supposed to be pretty good this year in the queue, and I think that's partially why he went back there instead of going to Boston College. But yeah, if he's out and Springfield's still going, he'll get a taste and see how he can do in that level.
Well, that's Matt DeFranks. I'm Jeff Gordon. This has been not Inside Pitch. This is Net Front Presence. I'm confused here.
Hockey season, Gordo.
It's been a while. It's been a while since I've done this. So, yeah, Net Front Presence. Reminder that you'll see all of our extra video content, podcasts, all that cool stuff that we do on STLtoday.com. We appreciate you stopping by and checking us out. Remember, there'll be tons more coverage coming up here in the digital edition of the Post-Dispatch. Until next time, for Matt, I'm Jeff. See ya.